Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to Radio Parallax. This show, as you know, or should know, hopefully know, airs every Thursday here on KDVS at 5 p.m. So as we've been going in recent weeks at week-long intervals, it's been hard to keep up with what all has been happening in Iraq. Last Thursday, I elected to take a deep breath and let things sort themselves out a bit before talking at great length. So last week's show, we talked about other things, except we didn't. In the third segment, we added to the discussion of the previous week with Dr. Lynn Roller of UCD's Classics Department, to talk about Mesopotamia, the history of it, and why it's so important. And I'm sorry to report that although we were expressing some cautious optimism on last week's program that the great artworks of the Baghdad National Museum would be preserved, disaster struck. But we'll come to that later. We were against this war. We've been rather outspoken in our position that this war was not justified all along. And I still feel that way, even though the government of Iraq has fallen. We are now in charge of Baghdad. I again would like to return to the quote that I used on the show for the last 2 weeks from Theodore Roosevelt in 1918, when he said, "To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public." By midweek last week, it appeared that there was about to be some major advance into the city of Baghdad. A week before that, the media was filled with reports of how the war had not been going according to the rosy forecasts of many people in the administration. Peter Arnett was sacked when he went on Iraqi television and said that the initial plan had failed, etc. The counterattack began. And by the weekend, there were various pieces appearing defending the administration's position, saying that they had not underestimated Iraqi strength and that things were going according to plan. But 2 days ago last week, the B, on Tuesday, April 8th, and on Thursday, April 10th, had pictures on their front page, which were very important images to what was happening over in Iraq. The one that I think is the more important of the two is the one showing a smoking crater, basically rubble, in a site in Baghdad, which was described as a big hole that was all that was left of the target. Apparently, 4 2,000-pound bombs were dropped, leaving a crater 30 feet wide and 60 feet deep in a building that supposedly just before that had harbored Saddam Hussein and his younger son, Qusay. The next day, in Baghdad, civil authority just appeared to have evaporated. So in a rather peculiar contrast to all of the papers being filled with "Is Saddam dead?" Over and over again, when he was appearing on television and obviously was alive, it strikes me as odd that after a bombing attack that one presumes was successful, the articles about whether Saddam is alive have disappeared. It's now said we don't really care whether he's alive or dead. He doesn't control Iraq. But for my money, people in other countries that aren't getting along with the United States must look at that 30 by 60 foot crater and wonder about being on the receiving end of same. The U.S. is on a tear. We're going to discuss that later on in the show. It does appear that Syria is next in the crosshairs. If I were the president of Syria right now, I'd be looking at that that picture with some concern because, you know, when you take out the leadership on the other side, a decapitation, things fall in your hands very quickly. It appears that is what happened in the case of Iraq. It's certainly effective militarily, but one wonders what sort of effect it will have politically on leaders of countries that, like I say, aren't getting along with the United States. Another image worthy of mention is the Marines smoking the cigarette and lounging around on the couches inside of one of Saddam Hussein's presidential palaces. But although this photograph suggested that the end was perhaps near for the Saddam Hussein regime, the picture that was flashed around the world that seemed to tell the story in pictures was the pulling down in the central square, or one of the central squares in Baghdad, of a large statue of the dictator. Several days before, evidently, a statue of Saddam had been pulled down in the city of Basra, and I think savvy people in the administration realized the public relations bonanza that could be had by repeating the process in Baghdad. Now, my sound engineer, Mr. Edward McMillan, was able to obtain a website which shows an aerial photo taken of that square in Baghdad at the time when allegedly jubilant crowds of Iraqis were pulling down the statue of their hated dictator. And what's curious about the photo is that you see that the square is virtually empty. I don't have that website, so you can see this for yourself, but before the broadcast is over, I'll get that for you. I am looking at the Chronicle from that date, showing an elated Iraqi boy walking down the streets of Baghdad. The boy has 9 armed United States Marines surrounding him. I don't know whether that was a representative sampling of the square in Baghdad, but judging by the aerial photo, it might well have been. Well, this photo, or this footage of the statue coming down, appears to have been, that's it, the war's over, using symbolism evocative of the Berlin Wall coming down. It was promulgated that tyranny had been overthrown and that the Iraqi people were now jubilant and rejoicing in their freedom. And while I certainly wish the best for the Iraqi people and hope that good will come of this, I'm very grateful that this conflict appears to be mercifully over at this point and that the killing of armed U.S. and British service people and that the deaths in Iraqi civilians can now be brought to a close. But I do want to express some real skepticism over the image that everyone seemed to have taken away from the statue coming down. The Iraqi people were not jubilant. You can look at the photos and see there were a small number. I'm sure that a lot of people are glad to see this bad guy go. I don't doubt that. But the image that people took away was that Iraqis were jubilantly celebrating everywhere, and this simply was not the case. The Iraqis did not pull down the statue of Saddam Hussein. The U.S. military did. You can see in the photos that there is a very large, it's either a tank or something very tank-like with treads on it, with a boom conveniently attached, suitable for pulling down large objects. As photo ops go, it was a brilliant piece of work. But as many photo ops do, it certainly oversimplified things. Now, I'm extremely sorry to report that although we spent a good amount of time on this program 2 weeks ago with Dr. Lynn Roller of the Classics Department of UCD talking about the vast cultural history of Mesopotamia, the area of today's Iraq, and in many cases, the tremendous debt we owe to these folks for their advancements of civilization. The greatest repository of such cultural artifacts and archaeology of this history to which, as I say, the whole world is in debt was in the Iraqi National Museum in Baghdad. On last week's show, as I was expressing some cautious optimism based on some reports in the media that the articles in the museum had been properly safeguarded, it turned out that although These artifacts, which in some cases dating back to ancient Sumeria, meaning they had survived invasions by Assyrians, invasions by Persians, invasions by Chaldeans, invasions by Alexander the Great, the Romans, the Muslims, the Turkish armies, World War I, World War II, and no less than three Gulf Wars, these objects failed to survive the peace. Dr. Roller, the week before, had said she wasn't sure what would become of these prized collections of antiquity. And as I was mouthing my words of cautious optimism, as I say, things were going very far south in Baghdad. Looting was undoubtedly going on as I was talking to you about it last week. I pulled off of ABC News a contemporary story of 1 week ago that is worth quoting from a bit. Now, mind you, as of 2 days before, presumably Saddam Hussein had been blown up. The next day, things just evaporated in terms of resistance in Baghdad. And by Thursday, civilian authority was non-existent. At this point, someone said, as quoted here by ABC News, under the byline of Amanda Onion, "Some fear a valuable location like the Baghdad Museum, which was a government-run building and dates back to the 1920s when it was founded by a British diplomat, could be an easy target. The museum is located near one of Saddam's presidential palaces in central Baghdad on the west bank of the Tigris River." To quote from Elizabeth Stone, an archaeologist at State University of New York in Stony Brook, quote, "If there is a time when you're going to lose the collection, it's now, during this volatile transition between Saddam Hussein's regime and whatever comes next." At probably about the same time those words were being published, looters destroyed what war did not. At the National Museum of Antiquities in Baghdad, people broke in and wholesale looting began. To quote from the Washington Post, article by Rajiv Chandrasekharan, "As throngs of angry and impoverished Iraqis sack government offices and private businesses, making away with everything from porcelain bathtubs and police uniforms to forklifts and ambulances, it has become increasingly clear that the looting that was sparked by the fall of Saddam Hussein's government, largely unchecked by U.S. forces, has wreaked more damage on Iraq's civilian infrastructure and economy than 3 weeks of U.S. bombing." Said Nabhal Amin, the Iraqi museum's deputy director, "If there were five American soldiers at the door, everything would have been fine. They're supposed to be here to protect us. They should be protecting us." He concludes the article noting, "Some Iraqis attribute the lack of an aggressive U.S. response to miscalculation, while others ascribe it to underhanded motives." They quoted a man named Mehdi Zouemi, a clerk in the foreign ministry, who said they wanted to let those robberies happen so the Iraqi people will be bankrupt and they will need American assistance. In an accompanying article that appeared in the B, alongside the reprint from the Washington Post, was an article by Hamza Hendawi of the Associated Press titled, "Western Civilization Suffers a Huge Loss. Baghdad, Iraq, the famed Iraq National Museum, home of the extraordinary Babylonian, Sumerian, and Assyrian collections and rare Islamic texts, sat empty Saturday except for shattered glass display cases and cracked pottery bowls that littered the floor. In an unchecked frenzy of cultural theft, looters who pillaged government buildings and businesses after the collapse of Saddam Hussein's regime also targeted the museum. Gone were irreplaceable archaeological treasures from the cradle of civilization. Everything that could be carried out has disappeared from the museum. Gold bowls and drinking cups, ritual masks worn by funerals, elaborately wrought headdresses, lyres studded with jewels, priceless craftsmanship from ancient Mesopotamia." Samuel Paley, a professor of classics at the State University of New York, Buffalo, predicted that whatever treasures aren't sold will be trashed. "The looters are people trying to feed themselves," said Paley, who has spent years tracking Assyrian relics previously looted from Nimrud in northern Iraq. "When they find there's no market, they'll throw them away. If there is a market, they'll go into the market." A few days later on Associated Press, Donnie George, director of antiquities at the National Museum, told CNN that U.S. laxity allowed looters to come back repeatedly. He said he went to the Marine headquarters in Baghdad 3 days ago, this is about the 10th, and waited for hours to talk with a colonel about security issues. That day, he promised that he will send armored cars to protect what's left from the museum, George said. 3 days ago till now, nobody came. CNN reported glass cutters were found at the museum, indicating professionals were involved in the looting. We should point out, if you've been following this story at all, and you should be, that while all of this was happening at the Iraqi National Museum, a company, and I'm not sure just how many soldiers that is, but a company of U.S. Marines was guarding the oil ministry, and reports say that there were a half dozen assault vehicles with them. They were there in force to prevent any looting of the paperwork of the Iraqi oil ministry. Now, folks, from my mind, you know, deeds speak louder than words. And I think the deeds involved in who's getting the guards say a lot more about the real motives of this war than most of the words I've heard. Now, many people have pointed out that according to the Geneva Convention, occupying forces have an obligation to prevent this sort of thing. The day after this was happening, I listened to Tom Sullivan briefly, which I usually do for about as long as it takes for Tom to say something really outlandishly wrong. It takes you typically, that's about 45 to 60 seconds. And he was off on a tear about these idiot reporters asking our defense secretary about all this looting going on. He said it was just incredible listening to it, how ridiculous all of this was, which apparently was, he's taking a cue from Secretary Don Rumsfeld's attitude himself. Rumsfeld attacked people who were bringing up the looting, said that people are losing sight of the big picture, a country's being liberated here. He said that reports of the breakdown in law and order in Iraq are being exaggerated and the same images are being seen over and over again. He said everyone's running around like Henny Penny saying the sky is falling. Well, as far as I can see, Secretary Rumsfeld and Mr. Sullivan, the sky fell for the Baghdad Museum last Thursday. And after realizing they had a bit of a public relations problem on their hands, the Army has now agreed to guard what's left of the museum, which admittedly involves large objects that couldn't be carted away in wheelbarrows. Guarding the barn door after the horses are out isn't the optimal way to do this. But even worse than that less than optimally helpful approach is what may be the harmful approach, reportedly on CNN on the night of the 14th, Monday. Colin Powell was quoted as saying that anyone who has any of these antiquities from the museum will be treated as a war criminal. Again, Samuel Paley, professor of classics, said that whatever treasures aren't sold will be trashed. If you tell people you'll be prosecuted if you possess these things, don't you think we're going to lose even more about what was stolen? I think an amnesty has to be asked for with a dollar payment for everyone that brings something in. I mean, that seems to be the way out of this, doesn't it? And yet now we're going to criminalize everybody. Excuse me, we're going to criminalize Iraqis, the people who were the looters, but those who are responsible for the breakdown in order and the fact that the looting took place apparently will not be held responsible. Now, as of last week, one of the world's greatest museums had one of the world's greatest collections of archaeology. It no longer does so. The only reason that is the case is because the military brought war upon Iraq and failed to exercise its responsibility in overseeing the area that it had conquered. This is a tragedy of epic proportions, and I'm very sorry to have to report on it. Let's take a well-deserved break. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett, and this is KDVS 90.3 FM.